cementing the crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
So just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro-FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2, this is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks along with Vicki Davis. Nice to have you with us once again as we document the crisis of our republic, the undermining of our national, state, and individual autonomy. And today is the 2nd of December, 2017. And if you thought you were going to talk about tax and spend Democrats anymore, well, you might as well abandon that meme altogether, because I tell you what, the Republicans pretty much have, they're right up there with the Democrats, ladies and gentlemen. There really is no difference. We sound like a broken record on this broadcast, as we've said it throughout the years so many times, but there really is no difference between these parties anymore. What happened last night is a perfect example of swamp in action. And I'm talking about this late-night vote by the Republicans, by the Congress, on this tax bill. 500 pages. I think it's 497 pages. Chock full of pork to get it all passed. And, of course, you got the president heralding it as a big tax cut. Well, it's a tax cut for the super wealthy. That's who it's a tax cut for. That's who it's designed to benefit, is the super wealthy. And folks, if you think that I'm a Democrat, if you're a new listener, then you haven't been listening for any length of time, because I have been hard on Democrats. I've been hard on Obama. Now I'm going to be hard on the Republicans, because there's no partisanship here. When it comes to the health of our country, and this is the thing that just really turns my crank here, is when I see people online putting party before the country. Nothing is more important, ladies and gentlemen, than the people that live in our country and the people, the future generations that will come after us. And anybody that thinks that this is a great thing, even if you really think your taxes are going to go down, and for a few, there will be some tax cut. But at what price? When all your deductions have been eliminated. You don't think that they're going to jack them back up again? They're throwing you a little bone there. But for many people, this is not even going... Taxes are going to go... It's going to be a massive tax increase. Regardless. But when they're eliminating your deductions, this is a paradigm shift. This is a big, huge paradigm shift, ladies and gentlemen. You don't get to deduct, you know, college students coming out of college, they don't get to deduct their student loan interest. You don't get to deduct your mortgage interest. You don't get to deduct your local taxes. That's massive. That's huge. And this is your Republican Party doing this for you. No, they're doing it to you. I'm just incensed. And then we have Congress critters. In Congress, Corker, I think, was one. No, let's see. I just put a tweet on this morning. They get in Congress and they say, oh, you know, I was just handed this an hour ago, a 500-page bill, and I don't have time to read it. And yet the same scumbag vote, you know, Obamacare was done exactly the same way. This guy was a Democrat. Obamacare was done exactly the same way, and what did he do? He voted for it. How many of these Congress people, you know, he's just grandstanding. It's the grandstanding. He said, this is John Tester. I was just handed a 479-page tax bill a few hours before the vote. One page literally has hand-scribbled policy changes on it that can't be read. This is Washington, D.C. at its worst. Yeah, and this is exactly the way they did Obamacare, and you voted for it, John Tester. Anyway,
Good morning, it's Vicky. Just a game that they play in Washington, D.C. You know, the Democrats have their position, the Republicans have their position. I think I've said this before. I heard Steny Hoyer say one time, "I'll be for you or against you, whichever helps you more." And that's what they do in Washington, D.C. It's just political theater.
Well, this is the reason why I hate politics. I hate politics. This is the thing that makes me sick. But
well, there's a very interesting in 2005 they did exactly the same thing. They gave a tax holiday to corporations to bring their offshore profits back onshore, with the idea that, you know, it was going to revive the economy. And it was I can't remember how $1 trillion that they brought back in through this temporary tax holiday. They gave it a temporary rate of 5.25% to bring their profits back. And of course, they didn't reinvest in this country. They said they would, but they didn't. But in the article that I have on the New York Times, the major corporate beneficiaries that are listed are the cash-rich pharmaceutical companies who shelter their foreign profits to avoid taxes. Merck has $15 billion, Johnson & Johnson $11 billion, Schering Plough $9.4 billion, Eli Lilly $8 billion, and it's estimated that by the end of 2005, between $100 billion and $500 billion will be repatriated. And that was just the pharmaceutical.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Which is really disturbing, given the fact that, I don't know if you've looked at this or not, but Trump's nomination for the Secretary of HHS is a guy named Alex Azar.
No, I haven't looked at that.
He was the CEO of Eli Lilly.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to they're draining the swamp, aren't we?
They're getting ready to implement the project that I said they would from the time I watched the National Governors Association meeting in 2007, when I realized that what they were doing was turning our healthcare system into a gigantic system for medical research, for basically human genetic research on making the entire population of the United States potential subjects.
That doesn't surprise me.
Well, that was the whole purpose of the nationalized medical records, which we do have nationalized medical records, and with research centered at the universities.
So, you know, any kind of... So, what would be the purpose for this? To target individuals?
Do you know what Dr. Mengele was doing over in Germany?
Yeah.
That is the purpose. Genetic modification.
Yeah, that's, you know, and people have been talking about for years, when you eat genetically modified foods, there is a morphing that takes place in your body. In order to digest it, your body, you actually have to change. You know, people have been suggesting for years that all of this stuff causes you to genetically mutation is the word, and
probably does. I mean, because this new paradigm in healthcare is chemistry based. Mm-hmm. Now, when they first started talking about it, they were talking about personalized medicine. But apparently, people figured that out, and now they've changed it to precision medicine, which means, you know, medicine's targeted directly for your body chemistry.
Yeah, and I wonder who came up with that term. You know, these terms
NIH,
don't. Yeah, these terms don't just come out of nowhere. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's the bad news. There is some good news, for whatever it's worth. I don't know, but the Bundys, some of the Bundys anyway, are out of jail. Now, this is only a temporary thing, of course. The Ammon and Ryan. Now, Cliven chose to stay.
I think because two of his other sons are still in there.
Yeah, and this Anna Navarro, who, well, I have a press conference. I have the press conference where Ammon was talking to the press. We could hear some of that here in a minute, but I thought it was noteworthy, the reason why. Did you catch the reason why?
I didn't get to hear the press conference from Ammon, but well, I do know that more evidence has come out about how they were set up, and the prosecutor was withholding evidence from the defense.
Exactly.
And they,
trying to fool
they lied to the judge, basically.
Yeah, exactly. So they were pulling some very underhanded things, the prosecution was. And so as a result of that, I think she got pissed, to be honest with you, because she's on their side.
And well, it makes her look like she's in collusion with them.
She is in collusion with them, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you don't want to be, if you're going to be corrupt, you don't want to be obvious
about it. Well, they were pretty obvious at the last trial. I don't think they really care a whole lot about that, but you can't look obvious in front of the jury, and that's the reason why they had a hung jury at the last trial, because the jury saw through it. So anyway, I'll this press conference. I don't know how much of it you want to hear, but it's a little bit. I thought it was worthy. Now it is noisy here, so I have to preface it, but it gets a little better to hear as you go along. There's planes flying over, and you know, they're outdoors, so there's a lot of outdoor noises. But you can make out what he's saying here, and like I say, it does get easier to hear.
America's always been an example of freedom, an example of family, an example of what's good in this world. And really, all that my family's ever tried to do is just promote that and to try to communicate it. We haven't always been the best at it. We struggle. We're just human, I guess. But that's what this is all about. It's about people and about life and about trying to do the best we can to promote and benefit the enjoyment of life. And that's all we've tried to do.
How do you feel about your dad's decision to stay?
You know, I actually I can't speak for my dad, but I can say that I understand it. I understand his desire to stay in there to bring continued attention to this. There's still a lot of people that are incarcerated right now that he feels a little bit of responsibility for. He wants to make sure they're not forgotten. He wants to make sure that they get out as well, and they get to their families, and they have these reunions like this. And I understand that. I understand that, you know, he wants to go home to his family, to the ranch. And so I respect that decision, and I understand it as well.
Can you tell us the reasons why the judge came to this decision?
I can't fully tell you the reasons why. There's been some sealed hearings and so forth that I wouldn't want to speak about, but I think she said it best right after she released us, and that was that the evidence that the government's been producing against us in trial has not been coming forth the way that they have I guess, presented it. And she is seeing that, and she decided in the effort of justice to release us. And we've known that that was always going to be the case, but we've suffered for 2 years trying to tell the world that what happened there was not what the government's been saying happened. And we're going to continue to show that in the courtroom, that what we did was right, what we did was according to our rights, more Americans need to do the same thing. And
how difficult was your time in jail? You had a lot of issues there. How difficult was that?
It's very difficult. I think I'll be the first to admit I'm not a very good prisoner. And I felt, and as well as others, not just me, that we were innocent and that we were not afforded the presumption of innocence. And if we look at the Bill of Rights, I think almost half of them are there saying to protect the accused. The accused has a right to a fair and speedy trial. The accused has a right to counsel. The accused has a right to call witnesses in their defense. And they were put in there for a reason. They're put in there to protect the accused. And I think maybe we've forgotten that a little bit, because there's a tremendous amount of people that are being accused and incarcerated, separated from their families. I mean, when I went in, this little guy was 11 months old. And I've missed 2 years of his life. I had a great opportunity to get to know him again, but I don't believe that that's the way it was supposed to be. I believe that we were supposed to be presumed innocent first. And
it's kind of noisy. Do you want me to continue with this, or?
No, I think you got the gist of it. That's.
Yeah. Okay.
I have a tremendous respect for the Bundys.
Yeah, I do too.
So, they really have highlighted the corruption in our system, not just the BLM, but the FBI, or the BLM and the National Park Service, which had paramilitary on the ground there.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps the Department of Transportation and the FBI, of course, and the prosecution, what I found out, you know, through Michael Emery's trial, is that there is collusion between the media and the justice system.
The so-called justice system.
Yeah, the so-called justice system. That's exactly right. They basically changed. Well, I could go on about that, but it seemed to me that in Michael's trial, what they tried to do was use evidence from the newspaper to convict at the pretrial, you know, because they can bring in all kinds of whatever they want at pretrial, mm-hmm. even things that are not relevant. And so what the newspaper did is provide that irrelevant information mm-hmm. that the prosecutor then used. And it was flat out, straight up collusion.
Yeah. I mean, we really do have a kangaroo so-called justice system. And I can't even call it a justice system at all, because there's no justice in it.
Yeah, no. It's and where they can charge you with whatever they want. I mean, they can just stack up the charges. There doesn't have to be any legitimacy to it. But the reason they do that is because they attach the penalties at the charging stage.
Right.
So it's not what
mandatory minimums. We talked about mandatory minimums before.
Right. So it's not what you end up being ultimately charged with. It's what you were initially charged with. Mm-hmm. So they can throw whatever they want to at you, and you end up being charged as a monster when you really, you know, if you did anything at all in reality, you're charged the absolute maximum for something you didn't really do.
Yeah, and another reason why they want to throw as much at you as possible when you're the accused is hopefully something will stick. You know, if they throw enough charges at you, something's bound to stick. If they can get a conviction on any one of those things, then they got you.
Mm-hmm.
They want to get more people into the system all the time.
Yeah, our entire Justice Department needs to be reorganized, cleaned out and reorganized. But what I found in looking at it is that our Department of Justice has been bifurcated.
Mm-hmm.
Divisions within the Department of Justice itself.
Yeah.
And I think those international divisions that are working on the international law section, I really do believe that they are overriding our domestic law.
Yeah, I believe that too. I believe we're really in international law. Really, it's maritime. Everything's maritime anymore.
Yeah.
We've talked ad nauseum about how they're bringing maritime law onto U.S. shores and how they're doing that. You know, speaking of the justice or injustice system, maybe that's what we should call it. The Kate Steinle murder verdict came out this week. And, of course, they acquitted. They acquitted Kate Steinle's murderer.
I don't know how those people could do that.
I don't know how they can live with themselves.
Yeah, I don't either.
It is just absolutely outrageous. This guy was deported 5 times. Had my understanding is he had handgun residue, gunpowder residue on his right hand. He admitted to firing the weapon.
He admitted he did it.
He admitted to firing the weapon. Yeah, and yet they acquitted him. He stole a gun. Couldn't you even get a conviction on theft? I mean, something.
Yeah. When I heard that verdict, my immediate thought was, we need to extend the wall and wall off California. They're not really part of the United States at this point.
Well, I'm not in favor of the wall because the wall works both ways, and it's not going to keep the criminals out anyway. I mean, they'll still come in. They'll come in through the tunnels. They'll come in through other ways. But what we do need is Border Patrol using the highest technology you can find to keep all of this stuff out. The contraband, the cartels. But the only thing that, you know, what we come back to the Congress, Vicki, every single time. Because everything that's wrong with America could be fixed by those scumbags that spent last night knifing you and I and everybody else in the country, other than the super duper wealthy that donated to them, in the back. Everything could be fixed. There's nothing that can't wrong with America that can't be fixed if we had people in Congress that wanted to fix it. The only conclusion that we can come to is they want these problems. They want
of
America
course.
To die.
Yes. Those people that are in Congress, they're whores for sale.
Yeah.
I think, you know, maybe they go, when they first come into Congress, maybe they have the right ideas. But the longer they're there, the more corrupt they get.
It doesn't take very long.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think they bring them, you know, we've played audio on the show here, and I think you remember this, wasn't that long ago. That they bring them in for the... At least I think we played this on the show. Maybe if we didn't, maybe we should. I'm pretty sure we did, though. They bring them in, they bring them in for their initial initiation ceremony. And they sit them down and wine them and dine them. And, I mean, everything is fancy. Give them the finest food, the finest wine, the finest everything. Because the message here is that this is how you live now. You've made it to the highest class. And this is it's a conditioning process.
Yeah. When I lived up in Alaska, I went to a Toastmasters group briefly, and there was a guy in that group. Actually, there were two people there who were going to run for state legislature, and so they were going to Toastmasters to learn how to do public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the guy won his seat, and he had been just an ordinary guy, a nice guy, you know, and very interested in the issues. When he came back to Anchorage after the first session, it was almost like he was dazed, almost like he'd been hypnotized or, you know, under the spell of Rasputin. He couldn't look you in the eye. It was so weird. I swear, it was just so weird.
Hmm.
It was like there was something really, really wrong with him.
Well, that's odd.
Yeah. I don't know what they did to him, but something happened to him.
That's bizarre. You got to wonder if he ended up somehow mind-controlled.
That's exactly what I thought.
Very odd. All right.
And that was before I mean, that was when I was totally living in what we used to call the real world, which we now understand to be the fantasy world.
Yeah, exactly.
I was totally engrossed in the fantasy of life in America.
Yeah.
But it was too bizarre not to notice.
Well, if there's anything good coming out of this, hopefully some people are finally starting to wake up to the reality that there is no difference between party. And if you're still clinging to this notion that some politician is going to bail you out, some politician, oh, my team is going to step in and save the day.
Last tax reform, I was destroyed.
Yeah.
1986 Tax Reform Act.
Yeah. All right, bottom of the hour break. We'll hit the ground running in the next segment. Stay with us, folks. This is Govern America. Back to the broadcast. This is Govern America. Vicki Davis is here. I'm Darren Weeks. The website is governamerica.com. That's governamerica.com. That's the official website for the broadcast where you can get all the archives, the latest news and information on the main page, the show notes for each broadcast that we do, because everything we cover, we make it a point of putting it in the show notes so that you can go through and mine as you need to do so. So governamerica.com is the website where you can get all that and more there. Vicki, you want to give your websites out?
Yeah, my old website that has a lot of research on it is channelingreality.com. And my new website is thetechnocratictyranny.com.
Yep.
And I think the links are on Darren's website,
yeah,
which is probably the easiest way to go.
Yeah, you can click across if you want to from the main page there. In the center, we have a lot of different links. I think the links there, well, there's two different places. On the left-hand side, you got tabs where you have the basically all the new postings that she puts up. You can just hit the tab for the Technocratic Tyranny and look at the new postings. Or you can, on the center column, there's What We're Reading, which has a lot of recommended websites, and her links are there at the top. So, thetechnocratictyranny.com and channelingreality.com. My email address is radio@governamerica.com, radio@governamerica.com. By the way, I need to also promote the chat room, because they got on my case last week for not doing so. chat.governamerica.com if you want to go there and participate with the other folks that are in there. You want to give your email out, Vicki?
Mm-hmm. My email address is eyeswideopen@channelingreality.com, but there are two O's in eyes wide.
Okay.
And
you cut out there. There's two O's in eyes wide open?
Yeah, Eyes Wide OOPEN.
Yeah. Okay. At channelingreality.com. All right. So we had the situation, speaking of the court system, speaking of the so-called justice system as we have, and the corruption that we have everywhere in government. We had the situation this week, breaking the last couple of days, that Michael Flynn pleaded guilty. Or is it pleaded or pled? I've heard it used both ways. I always said pled, but now they're saying pleaded. That's probably one of those Associated Press. I wonder if that's in the style book over there.
I don't know.
Who came up with these ideas? Oh, it's not pled, it's pleaded. But anyway.
No, I think it's pled, but you know, they're changing words
all
the time.
They're
dumbing down the language with along with the schools.
Yeah. So anyway, he pled guilty to lying to the FBI. This whole thing is really, all that is a technicality. They got him on a technicality. I think he panicked. But really,
well, they were threatening his son. That's what they do.
Yeah, there's, see, well, his son is still under threat.
That never really comes out, you know, in the public. But what the prosecutors do is they charge your family and or your friends.
Mm-hmm.
And so they really force you basically to take the plea.
Yeah, so anyway, he's in jeopardy now. Says he's, and there was all this press coverage yesterday. Oh, he's getting ready to testify before, you know, against Trump. And I
hope he does. I hope he spills his guts.
Yeah.
You know, and just exposes all of it, because I don't think there are any good guys involved in it. There aren't any good guys. They're all bad guys.
But this idea of Russian collusion is nonsense.
Yeah, it's a fraud. What they should be looking at is China.
Yeah, they should be, exactly. And you know what's funny about that? You sent me those videos from Vince Wade, and I had watched them before, and a lot of the details I had forgotten because it was 6 years ago. But they had a clip in one of them from Trump talking about how corrupt the system is, you know, regarding China. And it was really funny to see that in light of the fact that, you know, now he's president, and I see his people promoting the EB-5 visa program, you know, trying to recruit the Chinese to come here and set up shop.
Trump is a classic example of having the bully pulpit and saying one thing while his appointments, the people that are working at the high levels of government, are doing the exact opposite.
Yeah.
His transportation secretary, Chairman Chow, I call her, she is working to bring in communist Chinese money to build our infrastructure.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you played it once, an interview with Hannity where she says that she's not really very smart, and she started to say foreign direct, and then she caught herself, and then a minute later, but she said, but I'm not saying foreign, but she really was.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. I wonder if
right.
I still
have
that.
Right, and now the head of... was it DHS or Customs and Border Protection? He's bringing in a woman who is basically for open borders or more immigration. This appointment, this Alex Azar, who was the head of Eli Lilly. Mm-hmm. Eli Lilly, by the way, was involved in the Texas Medicaid or algorithm project, TMAP, which was basically using the Medicaid system for their drugs, which was a research project. They were developing their computer-aided system of prescription drugs for mental health, I guess it was, developing the algorithms so that the computers can advise doctors and basically not really doctors, but nurse practitioners and physicians' assistants on what drug to prescribe.
Exactly.
Computerized medicine.
Yeah, and that's everything today is the computerized medicine.
Right, and they really don't want educated people like doctors using those systems because doctors will think for themselves, but the second tier providers won't. They won't challenge because they don't have the credentials.
There you go.
And they don't have the education.
Well, and it's a potential liability for them too if they break from the system and do something else for the well-being of the patient.
Yes,
they could potentially get sued if something goes wrong.
Well, so could a doctor, but
true.
But they don't have the status. I mean, let's face it, they don't have the status, the education, or the credentials to take charge like a doctor does.
I'll tell you what, I want to get back to the Michael Flynn thing here in a moment, but we do have a call on the line. And folks, if you want to call in, the number is 844-646-8376. Toll free, 844-6-GOVERN, 844-646-8376. And let's go to St. Louis County, Missouri. Hello, you're on the air. Well, you're supposed to be on the air. Hello. What's going on here? Now, this is weird. I didn't change anything, and I'm not getting anything through my board. I'm going to have to work on this.
Huh.
Strange.
Well, did he say something?
Let's try that. Hello, you're on the air now.
Yeah, this is Sam calling.
Yeah, boy, you know, it helps if you hit the button on the hybrid, huh?
Yeah, it worked better that way. But had a couple of comments I wanted to mention regarding the Michael Flynn situation. By the way, I'm hearing myself echoing back big time. I don't know if there's something looped on
you. All right, well, hold on. You know, it wouldn't be a live show if we didn't have technical problems. Let's try...
Okay, now you're gone completely.
Yeah, I know. Hold on. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Can you hear me now?
Now you're fine.
Now I sound like a Verizon commercial. All right, go ahead.
Okay, all right. Basically, what I was going to comment on this whole thing was, it's kind of interesting they keep hanging on to this Russian collusion thing when we just had a story break this past week regarding the State Department and George Soros apparently colluding together to affect elections over in Hungary so that a more favorable regime might be installed to make it more favorable for his little butt to be able to go back home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? What Reagan did and what Gorbachev agreed to was a battle of ideologies. Ideas and systems. When the Berlin Wall came down, that set in motion a basically a civilian-based war. And the elements of that war are free elections, free press, freedom of speech, and you know, it's basically there were four freedoms listed, but the elections, that's the biggest fraud about them claiming that Russia was involved in our elections, because what our government has been doing through the National Endowment for Democracy, and in particular through the International Republican Institute and the National Democratic Institute, is interfering in elections all over the world, but in particular in the Eastern Bloc countries of the former Soviet Union.
Yeah, that's the irritating part of the whole thing because, you know, it's once again hypocrisy on display. You know, at this point, even if there was collusion with the Russians by Trump, it still doesn't the hypocrisy to the average person out there, and that's the point I'm making, and I've been making for a long time. Governments do this all the time. This is the crap that they do, particularly the governments of the industrialized world, and yet we're supposed to believe that our government is totally innocent, that they would never do something like this, but because Trump got out there included with the Russians, that if that is what they say, which I don't believe, if he was to have colluded with the Russians, oh, that's an unpardonable sin. He must be impeached and all this kind of stuff. You know,
well, the first problem that you got to ask, the question you have to ask is, what do you mean by collusion? Because this happened, this allegedly happened during the transition, where it's perfectly acceptable, in the case of Michael Flynn, the national security advisor, it's perfectly acceptable and really expected that a national security advisor is going to reach out to other countries during the transition to make for a smooth transition. And this is all that he was doing, and he says, Trump instructed me to do so. And then there's this big controversy as to whether or not Trump actually did or whether he didn't. It doesn't really matter. This is a classic case of trying to create a big smoke and mirrors, thing that isn't really there. I mean, it's a phantom issue. It's just,
well, you know what it is? It's a classic example of how the media is used to basically for fraud.
Yeah,
if you look at the list of the first 100 days of any president, going back, as far as our newspapers cover, or the history that you can find, you'll find that the first 100 days is meeting with all the other world leaders. Well, how do those meetings occur? Somebody's got to set up those meetings, right? And so who would that be? A national security advisor, maybe?
Hang on the line here, Sam, because I want to play this backgrounder since we're talking about it anyway. This is from ABC News, and afterwards I'll tell you what they did wrong.
We begin tonight with Michael Flynn and his guilty plea. President Trump's former national security advisor admitting he lied to the FBI, arriving with his wife at federal court in Washington, already processed and fingerprinted as part of his plea. With the deal, Flynn is now agreeing to cooperate with the special counsel. Could that mean Flynn will testify against the president? We begin with ABC's chief investigative correspondent, Brian Ross.
He was once one of the president's closest advisors, one of his first major appointments. But today, as General Michael Flynn walked out of court in Washington, protesters chanted, "Lock him up." An echo of Flynn's own words about Hillary Clinton.
Lock her up!
Flynn pleaded guilty today to lying to the FBI, telling associates he is prepared to testify, if needed, against President Trump and others in the White House.
How many more figures have to be brought to justice because of their ties with Russia before we end up connecting all these dots?
Flynn now admits he lied about his conversations with the Russian ambassador, Sergei Kislyak, during the transition period. The White House had claimed it was unaware of the substance of those conversations. But today's court documents show Flynn was acting with the knowledge of senior transition team officials. The first example, on the same day President Obama imposed tough sanctions on Russian facilities in the U.S. for meddling in the election, the Russian ambassador contacted Flynn. Flynn then consulted with a senior transition team official who said the Trump team did not want Russia to escalate the situation. A request Flynn then made directly to the ambassador. Putin did not retaliate, and President-elect Trump then tweeted, "Great move by Vladimir Putin. I always knew he was very smart." The documents also show that a very senior official on the transition team told Flynn to contact the Russian ambassador about a UN resolution involving Israel. Tonight we are learning that very senior official was the president's son-in-law, Jared Kushner. The president has insisted he did not tell Flynn to make the contacts with Russia.
No, I didn't direct him, but I would have directed him if he didn't do it, okay?
But according to a confidant of Flynn's, he is prepared to testify that Trump did direct him to contact the Russians during the transition.
During the transition. Now, that's a key point right there, because ABC News had previously reported, and this is the part I was talking about that they got wrong. I think that they deliberately got this wrong. They put out, citing a source, a confidant of Flynn, they wrongly put out that it was during the when he was candidate Trump, not during the time that he was president-elect Trump. And that's a big deal.
That's a huge deal.
And because it goes back to the violation of the law, where what's that law? Gosh, I can never remember the name of it. That you can't negotiate the Logan Act. It's the violation. It goes around to the Logan Act. The Logan Act was I think signed into law in 1799 by John Adams. And basically says that the private individuals, unauthorized people, are not allowed to negotiate with a foreign government that's got a dispute with the United States, because it would undermine the existing presidency. So you've got.
Oh, I think that law has long is obsolete, because the whole negotiations after the Helsinki Final Act was signed. All of those negotiations were with non-governmental organizations doing the negotiations. I think it's called Track 2 diplomacy. Using private individuals as go-betweens between governments.
The law is still technically on the books, and they're still using it.
A gotcha. That has
yeah,
to
it's
be
a gotcha
for-
because nobody's ever been prosecuted for it, as far as I know. There's a couple of people I think that have been charged with it, but nobody's ever actually been prosecuted, I don't believe. But they're going to use this to try to hold it over people's heads, just like you said, a gotcha move.
But according to a confidant of Flynn's, he is prepared to testify that Trump did direct him to contact the Russians during the transition, initially as a way to work together against ISIS.
It's at odds with what he has been saying publicly from day one.
The plea documents also suggest Mueller's investigation may be focused on President Trump's firing of FBI Director James Comey. Flynn lied to the FBI on January 24th. On January 26th, Acting Attorney General Sally Yates told the White House he had lied. The very next day, January 27th, the president, on short notice, invited the FBI director to a private dinner.
The dinner was an effort to build a relationship. In fact, he asked specifically of loyalty in the context of asking me to stay.
2 weeks later, Flynn was fired, and Comey says the president later asked him to go easy on the general.
I understood him to be saying that what he wanted me to do was drop any investigation connected to Flynn's account of his conversations with the Russians.
Even after Flynn was gone, the president still praised him.
General Flynn is a wonderful man. I think it's really a sad thing that he was treated so badly.
And David, a clarification tonight on something one of Flynn's confidants told us and we reported earlier today. He said the president had asked Flynn to contact Russia during the campaign. He's now clarifying that, saying, according to Flynn, candidate Trump asked him to find ways to repair relations with Russia and other hotspots during the campaign. And after the election, the president-elect told him to contact Russia on issues, including working together to fight ISIS.
In the meantime, that statement from Michael Flynn today, Brian, says that I accept full responsibility for my actions.
That's right. Flynn's confidant says Flynn is extremely angry at the White House that he was going broke with crippling legal fees and made this deal for his family. His son had also been under investigation, but was not charged to date.
So there you go. That's the report. But I think, you know, to suggest that there's a violation of the Logan Act here, and I'm assuming you're still there, Sam.
Yeah, I'm here.
First of all, you'd have to prove that something he did was done to undermine the sitting president. Obviously, I'm not a legal expert here, but that's.
Well,
this
wait,
is what
he had been appointed.
He was
the,
president
National Security Advisor at that
yes.
point, so to president elect.
Right.
So he was not a private citizen.
Well, that was
so
my
that
second point.
Apply.
That was my second point because
oh,
you have. That's okay. it's, we're thinking along the same lines here. Because since it was President-elect Trump, you know, how could he... The law says you have to be unauthorized, an unauthorized person. So it's highly debatable that whether or not he was authorized. I mean, in any way, he didn't do anything to undermine the sitting president. What they were trying to do is trying to avoid a political situation where, you know, you had tit for tat. You have the Russians retaliating against the United States for sanctions that the present administration, which was Obama at the time, was doing to the Russians. So they were trying to keep... How could it be undermining the current administration to try to keep a foreign government from imposing sanctions upon you? But see, what this looks like to me is they want... This is the deep state wanting retaliation because they really wanted to get their little war started, and these people got in the way. Now, will that continue? I don't have a whole lot of confidence in Trump or the GOP or any of these characters. But at the time, this was not something that was favorable to the intelligentsia and certainly not to the military-industrial complex. So, anyway, that's my thoughts on the matter. I don't know if you have anything to add, Sam?
No, not really. I've been following this leading up to where we are now, and then when this thing with the State Department broke last week, that just basically told me everything I need to know. Basically, they're trying to make a big deal out of this one thing. And, I mean, I'm not saying this because I'm just a total avid, total Trump supporter. You know, I pointed out some misgivings I have, including the stuff we talked about with the you know, keeping the swamp filled over there.
Right. All right, I'll tell you what. We got the break coming up here. Let me go
That's
ahead.
That's all I got.
All right, thanks. Appreciate the call. All right, let's go ahead and take the break, and we'll continue on the other side. Stay with us, folks. Governed America continues here in just a moment.
Of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
From just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5. This is the second hour of Govern America. Darren Weeks and Vicki Davis here with you, as we are every Saturday. We hope you'll tell somebody about the broadcast. And it continues to be the 2nd of December 2017 as we get right back into it here. Talking about the situation with Michael Flynn pleading guilty this past week, just a couple of days ago. It was a big, big deal. And, of course, the stock market drops massively, but it's really all of this stuff is going to it's going to be bouncing back, because honestly it doesn't really this really is a lot of smoke and mirrors, as we were covering in the last segment. And I do have one more clip, and just to illustrate what we were talking about here, because you know in the last hour, in case you're just joining us, we were sharing all of this stuff centers around the Logan Act, this 1799 law that forbids unauthorized people from negotiating with foreign governments over the dispute they have with the United States. Trump was president-elect at the time. So even if he did direct someone to negotiate with the Russians, it is highly doubtful that he broke the Logan Act. As we said in the last break, you'd have to prove that he did something to undermine the sitting president, which he didn't. But more importantly, what he did was he was trying to. He wasn't unauthorized. As an incoming president, a president-elect, he was well within his. You can communicate with whoever you want, folks. There, you know, but even Leon Panetta was on NBC with Chuck Todd, and even he had to admit, though he was trying to make it sound like Trump was somehow implicated, or the I'm not defending Trump, and I'm not really defending anybody other than the fact that the important thing here is the truth. The big thing is, I see what's going on with the media, and I don't like this partisanship. My team, and this is the theme, I guess, for the show here, because the media is all in with the Democrats, but when it comes to exposing the Democratic Party, there's a double standard here, and I don't like this. Leon Panetta was on MSNBC with Chuck Todd, and even he had to admit that it was a stretch to suggest that Trump broke the law.
This approach that we have one administration at a time, and a newly elected president has always abided by that principle, largely because you can't have two presidents. It would impact on the credibility of the United States. So generally, incoming administrations really are very careful not to take action that could in any way disrupt something that the current administration is doing. This was very unusual. I don't, whether it breaks the law or not, I think that's probably a stretch.
But how is it different?
It clearly breaks the principle that a new administration refrains from doing anything that appears to impact on United States policy. And they, through the plea today and through the kind of evidence that we're getting, there's no question that they were trying to do that.
So, you want to talk about collusion with the Russians, Vicky? I mean, you sent me over a document from, I think it's Amanda Teagarden's website, OK Safe. Smart Grid San Diego and Electric Signs Memorandum of Understanding with the Russian Federation. And the U.S. State Department was involved in this deal with San Diego, signing the deal with the Russians to collaborate on the smart grid.
Yeah. Well, and the whole thing is just such a fraud. It makes me... Well, we know about the plan to create the cyber command, you know, the military command structure. But something that worries me a lot is that this also, I'm afraid that this might be a ruse to get Trump out of the way to make Mike Pence president. And in my research, what I found is whoever the top person in the agency is, they are the disposable one. And I think that includes our presidents. Mm-hmm. I think it's the second man down who is the important one. And in the last, I don't know how many administrations, it's always been the vice president that does all the dirty deeds. And I'm really worried about having Mike Pence as president because I do not like him. And I didn't like him even before he was appointed. But I can't remember why. One of these days when I have some time, I've got to go back and research all of Pence's positions on things. But I know that I don't like him. So when I feel that way about somebody, there's a good reason for it, even if I'm not able to, you know, pull it out of the memory banks.
Yeah. Well, I'm at the point where I don't like any of them, and I think the problem is that we're no matter what we do, there's not a whole lot of area for redress of grievances here. I come back to, and I know I sound like a broken record, but the only solution that we have here, as far as I'm concerned, and other people will disagree with me on this, is your own individual preparedness and trying to do things through a state, through your state and local government. And that's it. I mean, try, you know, and again, I say trying because your state and local government, almost anymore, that's an area where it's, you're not going to have a whole lot of impact in many cases. But if you get enough people, if you get enough people organized and keep pounding them, you can make some headway in certain cases. It's worth a try. But other than that, I mean, we're just kind of shadow boxing with the phantom in the dark as far as trying to get Washington, D.C. to do it. You're never going to reform it. It's just too corrupt. This could be such a great country if we just didn't have all the corruption.
And Congress has corrupted our local officials through the Great Society programs. I've talked about this before, the Economic Development Administration and all of that. They have basically bought our local officials with money coming from Washington, D.C., flowing through the Great Society programs. Mm-hmm. So when you go to your town council meeting or your county commissioners meeting, they might let you speak, but as far as they are concerned, you're not a shareholder, you're not a stakeholder in their what basically is a privatized system of corruption. I really think it might actually be the communist system. But I can't say that because I can't read Russian. I can't stop and say it. But I mean stop and read enough to find out. But the feds, the agencies of government, have basically bought our local officials.
Yeah, well, that's true, and there are there's a lot of money flowing in there. But I think if people organize, but the problem is organizing takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of people involved to make
it. And leadership.
And leadership. And most people, unfortunately, don't have the time or even the inclination, the will. Mm-hmm. You almost have to make it a lifestyle. And people, just generally speaking, don't have time to do that, even if they have the best of intentions.
You know what I think really is the best thing is media. Become the media, because if you're writing and distributing it around in your local area, even if you give it away for free, even if you don't make a dime on it, and even if you lose money on it, that's the way you get their attention, is by becoming the media.
We need local talk show hosts who are blowing the whistle on government. That's, you know, doing the job that ministers used to do. You remember back in the day, before the 501c3 tax-exempt organizations came into being, before ministers sold their congregations out, we used to have preachers in the pulpit preaching against government and against what they were doing, against the corruption. People in public office would fear the pulpit. Well, they don't anymore. Tell you what, we got a call on the line. Let's go ahead and take the call and see if we can do this a little better. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, Darren. Hey, Vicki. This is Art off the grid. How you guys doing today?
Pretty good. Hanging in there.
Hi, fine. Thanks.
What's going on?
Before I get to what I called in about, as far as like trying to work within your local governments, I'm sorry, as Vicki was pointing out, they're all corporations, and we thank Clint Richards for making us aware of that. And anybody that doesn't believe that your local governments and all governments are corporations, just go look up their CAFR and you'll find out, because only corporations are required to fill one out every year. Anyway, what I called in about was, you know, this whole thing about Russian collusion and they're still trying to find something to hang Trump on to say that Russia interfered in our elections and da-da-da-da-da. I forget who the Democrat politician was about 3 months ago, gave an interview, and he said, countries do this all the time, trying to interfere and influence and direct the elections of other countries. We do it. China does it. Everybody does it. So why is it such a big deal? I mean, Obama, look what Obama did. Okay, Obama helped to do how many? You know, and if this working to redirect elections or help put puppets in position were such a bad idea, let's go all the way back to 1952. Project Ajax was one of the first ones I can think of, where the U.S. government literally, by dirty deeds and bad dealing, literally overthrew the democratically elected government of Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been doing it, and then they use military force in countries like Iraq and Afghanistan. And then they use covert tactics like Obama did on, at least two, possibly three different occasions. Why is it such a big deal when Trump does exactly what Trump has the authority to do, but it's not a big deal when Democrat governments do it when they don't have the authority to do it? It's kind of like, heaven forbid, that a Republican acted out of order with sexual harassment, but yet the Clintons get a pass because they're Democrats. I am so sick and tired of this double standard.
Yeah, me too.
It just makes me nuts.
And it's not even about partisanship with me, because I don't care about party. I really don't. I mean, if a Democrat comes along and is doing right by the Constitution, by the country, you know, supporting the rights of the people, trying to avoid stealing our wealth, stealing everything that we own, everything that's not nailed down, then fine, you know, I would support I'd happily support that Democrat. But there's just win at any cost, and you know, kick the country. Go ahead. I'm sorry. We're talking over each other.
Yeah. Look at John Kennedy, for example. Democrat, womanizer. I mean, my God, everybody knew what he was doing. Nobody cared. Why? Because in the end, he was trying to do the right thing, and that's what got him killed. I would have now, granted, in 1963, I was only like 9 months old when this happened, but I did my research. I know what he was about. I know how he reacted when L.A. Limitzer came up with the Northwoods document. I know how Robert McNamara handled that situation. I've done the research into that. But had I been alive and old enough back then, I would have supported Kennedy, and he's a Democrat. I got nothing against anybody based on their political party. It's what they do I have a problem with. Just like I had major issues with George Bush Jr. when he gave the orders to go into Afghanistan, because I knew that was a lie.
Yeah. And boy, do I have an update on Afghanistan.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, there are two mafia groups that are run by the same, at the top, they're run by the same people.
Yeah.
They're just the same. Does anybody remember when Al Gore and Bill Clinton were raising money that was linked back to China, communist China? They were raising money from, let's see, Al Gore attended a fundraiser that was sponsored by monks. That was foreign money, and they were caught, and it did come out in the newspaper, but it all went away, right, almost immediately.
Yeah, I believe that also was also linked to the involvements with Charlie Tree and several others with the Triad.
Yep, that's right.
So, I mean, and now we got Trump, and everybody's praising this new tax bill, and it's like, are you kidding me? How many people are about to get butt raped on this one? This is just ridiculous. Trump's no better than the rest of them.
No, he's really not.
Well, the media tells us that people support it, but you know what? Even if you listen to C-SPAN, a lot of the callers are, they're operatives. And if you count the number of people that you have a Southern drawl, I think that is a fake accent. And the reason why is because they're trying to portray themselves as just down home good Americans, you know. But I know that there are companies of people that call in stating support or opposition to positions. Because I've been watching C-SPAN for a long, long time, and I'd say in the past decade and a half is when this really started, trying to create a perception of public opinion.
I'm from the heart of Georgia, and this is the accent that we have in the heart of Georgia. So anybody calling in and talking like this and claiming to be from the deep South, I'm sorry, but, you know, that accent went out years ago.
Well, I don't know about that.
Well, I
wouldn't say that because...
And that's how you know they're fake, because
I got folks from Alabama. I got a lot of folks from Alabama, and I tell you right now, a lot of them do talk that way.
But you can tell the difference between one that's genuine and one that isn't. But you can't say that with a national TV program like this, that if 60% of the callers are from the South, wait a minute. You know,
I don't know. Don't get me wrong. I'm not suggesting that there aren't people that call in there and their show callers, because I can tell you right now, I've gotten more than my share of those over the years. Mostly when I was on RBN, we had a lot of show callers. If I had show callers now, all I got to do is pull down the pot and say goodbye. But over there, you're pretty much at the mercy of the board operator, and good luck if you can get their attention. A lot of times with the Skype ducking, the caller is able to take control of the show. So that's one advantage of being your own board operator, is you have full control. And, you know, we do have the technical issues that you have to work out yourself. But the point of the matter is that I don't doubt that there are show callers. But I don't know. I think that C-SPAN is one of those areas. C-SPAN is one of those. Hold on. C-SPAN is one of those networks that you can still get through when you're an ordinary person.
Most of the time, I tried to call Thomas when Thomas Barnett was on one time.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to call, and I did get through, and they put me on ignore. Never got to my phone call. Never.
Huh.
And I've called before, you know, lots before. And if you get in and they answer the phone, then you know, they'll take your call. But not on this particular day.
Mm-hmm.
It was weird.
Yeah.
I really wanted to comment on what he was saying too.
When it comes to people's accents and stuff, a lot of it with me is I look at their age, because I know the only ones that really speak with that real heavy Southern drawl are going to be your older generation, and the ones that live so far out in the sticks, you damn near just about got to pump in electricity to them.
Well, that's probably a good thing.
There's one woman here in Twin Falls that says she's from Idaho, but she speaks with that twangy Southern drawl. Now, I asked her about it, and she said, oh, I picked it up when I was, you know, down south. But even if you do pick up a twang when you go down south, when you come home, you get rid of it.
It don't last long. Yeah, it don't last long. But anyway, you know, I am so fed up with this garbage, you know, of this whole Russian collusion thing, back to the original conversation. Personally, I talk to people around here, and, you know, nobody really cares. Nobody really cares about it. They're like, so what?
Yeah.
So what?
You got a dog barking there?
People around here don't even believe the elections are real anyway. They think it's all rigged anyway.
Yeah.
I think it is. Stalin is the one that... I think it's Stalin that said it doesn't matter.
Whoever,
or maybe it was
whoever,
Lenin.
Whoever counts the vote?
It's whoever counts the vote.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's right. And it's our county officials that have been bought off by the feds that count the votes. So yep. There you go.
Yep, exactly. Art, thanks for calling in there, friend.
All right, y'all have a great one.
All right, take it easy. Yep. All right, folks, you're welcome to call in as well. 844-646-8376. There's Art calling in from Missouri. 844-646-8376. As we continue on here, I wanted to get into this One Belt, One Road thing, Vicki. This is a thing that I actually wanted to talk about this for a long time, so I was really glad that you started down this road, no pun intended, to talk about this or to start researching this. You sent me a video from an outfit called the Daily Conversation about the China One Belt, One Road initiative. Now, you know, the thing is this all is, to me, this is regionalism. This is all a part of the integration of different places geographically, trying to create transient lines for imports, exports, and resource sharing. And it's pretty remarkable that this is, looks to me like a cookie cutter approach.
To me, this is war. Yeah. And it is the control of commerce globally.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is your New World Order.
Yeah. Well, the what they're talking about there, the One Belt, One Road, is what I have been talking about for absolutely years. And what you'll hear in this video, when they mention the elements of infrastructure that China is building, if you look at the artist's rendition of the Trans-Texas Corridor, it's exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
Having because it completed. Is the same.
Oops, sorry.
It is the same.
Thought you were done. Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
Right. Having recently completed both the world's most extensive system of expressways and the planet's longest high-speed rail network, China is now looking beyond its borders for opportunities to keep building. President Xi Jinping announced at a recent summit that Beijing has sealed megaproject deals with 65 countries throughout Eurasia and Africa to construct ports, power stations, rail lines, roads, and all the tunnels and bridges needed to connect them back to mainland China. At a total cost of over $1 trillion, the One Belt, One Road initiative is unprecedented in size and scope. So is the bold funding mechanism. China will use its large, state-run banks to provide most of the financing. A risky move when you consider how few of the nations in the OBOR could afford something like this on their own. Oh, say the leaders of economically challenged underdeveloped Laos, Yemen, or Ethiopia, or the blood-soaked regime of Bashar al-Assad in war-ravaged Syria. You want to loan us billions of dollars to build some cool stuff in our countries? Of course, why not? China is hard selling the project as a way to boost its westward connections, an update of the Silk Road trade route that played a significant role in developing China and the rest of the region 1,000 years ago. But many analysts see this comparison as little more than a marketing pitch. Aside from the lessons China learned from its own recent infrastructure boom, Beijing is also drawing inspiration from the American Marshall Plan, which financed the rebuilding of Western Europe after it was decimated during the Second World War. That program was worth the equivalent of $130 billion in today's dollars and ensured the U.S. had reliable export markets for the manufactured goods and machinery its growing economy had become dependent on producing.
I just want to jump in here and say that how many times have you said that that is exactly the plan that they're following?
Yes.
It's the Marshall
Plan.
Yep,
that is.
Over and over again.
China's modern version, first announced in 2013, is the signature initiative of President Xi Jinping. Several projects have already been completed. Earlier this year, London became the 15th European city connected directly to China through an ever-expanding global rail system, meaning freight trains loaded with goods can now arrive after a 12,000-kilometer journey all the way from the east coast of the landmass. And at a cost of $4 billion, China also just completed Africa's first transnational electric railway, which runs 466 miles from Djibouti to Addis Ababa, the capital of Ethiopia. Chinese companies designed the system, built the line, and supplied the train cars. The many other projects under the OBOR umbrella include a $6 billion 260-mile railway connecting eight Asian countries, desperately needed power plants to address Pakistan's chronic electricity shortage, part of a larger $46 billion investment by China in Pakistan aimed at offsetting the American and Japanese-backed building boom happening in neighboring India, China and Pakistan's mutual rival. Train lines will connect Budapest and Belgrade, Serbia, providing another artery for Chinese goods to reach Europe after arriving in a Chinese-owned port in Greece. And, in a move that adds prestige to OBOR, China is financing more than a third of the $23.7 billion cost of the Hinkley Point C nuclear power plant in southwest England. Part of the challenge in analyzing whether this building boom is ultimately good for the world is its sheer complexity. Nothing like this has ever been done before in human history. Yes, providing underdeveloped countries a chance to have better transportation infrastructure or cleaner power plants is a good thing. But by funding infrastructure that's designed to enhance commerce and trade, instead of basic services many of these countries need more, like clean drinking water, affordable housing, and better education, China's motives seem to favor the wealthy elite business class.
And there you have it. The wealth.
Yes.
Everything they do favors the wealthy elite business class. So, as it is in over there, the same thing as it is over here. Now, we'll continue this on the other side of the break, because there's more to discuss regarding this One Belt, One Road initiative. This is a cookie-cutter approach, and I can tell you, it looks to me like they're doing exactly the same type of thing in Afghanistan as well.
They are. Did I send you a link to the article I wrote called It's a Cookie Cutter World?
Yeah.
About Pakistan's Silk Road,
mm-hmm.
that China's funding? That's the model. That is
the
model.
There you go. Exactly. All right, bottom of the hour. We'll continue on the other side. This is Govern America, Vicki Davis, Darren Weeks, and you. We'll be back in a moment. Tell you what, all you need really is this song and a cup of nice strong coffee in the morning, and that'll get you going. Welcome back to the broadcast. This is Govern America, ladies and gentlemen. GovernAmerica.com is the website for the show. GovernAmerica.com. Vicki's website's TheTechnocraticTyranny.com and ChannelingReality.com. Talking about the One Belt, One Road initiative, the initiative in China building on to, you know, really paths across Europe, paths connecting them to Middle Eastern countries, and really Eurasia, all across Eurasia, building out so that they can have all of this. Really, it's a regional integration system, ladies and gentlemen, for free trade.
Yeah.
And we were playing before the break the video from the Daily Conversation, and it starts to get a little political, which I don't agree with everything they say in the video. But it does go on to outline some of the problems that the Communist Chinese Party has been undergoing. Did you have anything you wanted to say, Vicki, before we...
Yeah, I really want to encourage the audience to watch the video after Darren puts it in the archive.
Show
because
notes.
you really can't appreciate the magnitude of what they're doing unless you see it.
Yeah, and I'll also put a map... Because there's a lot of maps on the One Belt, One Road initiative, and they're all different. I think a lot of them were proposed lines, proposed areas that they did. But basically what we're talking about, there's several things. There's two different things mainly. You're dealing with six different corridors and a maritime Silk Road, they call it. First of all, you have the New Eurasian Land Bridge, is what they call it, running from Western China to Western Russia through Kazakhstan. Then you got the China-Mongolia-Russia corridor, running from Northern China to Eastern Russia. Then you've got China-Central Asia and West Asia corridor, running from Western China to Turkey. You got the China-Indochina Peninsula corridor, running from Southern China to Singapore. Then you have the China-Myanmar-Bangladesh-India corridor running from southern China to Myanmar. And then you have the China-Pakistan corridor running from the southwestern China to Pakistan, and the Maritime Silk Road running from the Chinese coast through Singapore to the Mediterranean. This is a massive program, massive infrastructure, trade route program that they've launched here, spending a lot of money, and the dividends, and you know, one of the big reasons why they're doing this is because they want to be equal and surpass the United States as far as superpower status. And we're allowing them to buy stuff in this country and take over in the meantime. You were going to say something?
If they control the ports, I mean, you don't really have to be a military strategist to understand this. If they control the ports, whoever controls the ports basically controls the economy of the surrounding area.
Yes.
And the ports are choke points. And so... Which was what I saw immediately when I saw the first,
when you
what
saw
would you call it, the South Asia part of it, mm-hmm. coming to southern Mexico. So they announced this One Belt, One Road as being an initiative beginning in 2013, but it started long before that.
Yeah, and what's interesting about that, you're talking about the bringing of the extension of NAFTA to Asia, which is a fascinating map. We'll put that in the show notes, the link to that as well. But you're dealing with the Trans-Pacific Multimodal Security System, which brings NAFTA to Singapore. And this looks to me, I think the Trans-Pacific Partnership was really an extension of NAFTA.
It could have been, well, the organization...
It's just another way of doing it.
The organization that was established for the Pacific Nations was...
Was what?
APEC, the mm-hmm. Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Organization. And it included all of the Pacific Nations. That organization was formed in 1989... initiated by the Prime Minister of Australia, and it was held in Canberra, Australia. Mm-hmm. China, of course, was invited into it, but it is essentially NAFTA for the Asia-Pacific nations.
Yeah.
And because the United States is a Pacific nation, not only because our West Coast is on the Pacific, but because of the Alaska and the territories, you know, Philippines, and I don't know what all, where the United States has facilities in the Pacific, but we are a Pacific nation as well as an Atlantic, you know, nation. So
yeah. Well, the thing that I find interesting is the fact that this is, like you said, you described it as a cookie-cutter world. We're seeing the same thing in Africa as they're investing billions of dollars in Africa to build infrastructure, to do various things, roadways. I remember when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, she was over there and she talked about that highway, the super highway that they wanted to build along the, you know, in the spine of Africa. And I remember this sound is exactly like that NASCO corridor that they tried to build here. What was
it? It is.
Five
exactly
football fields
same.
Wide. Yeah, what she was describing sounded exactly like the NAFTA superhighway. And I thought, well, gee, you know, here you got the same model going on over there. Nobody's going to be out against it because those poor people, any infrastructure that can be built for them is a good thing for them.
I'm wondering if that's why they're allowing the killing of elephants.
I don't know. But I can remember all the African leadership being over here having a powwow with Obama at the White House. And I think that there's a lot of backstabbing going on. A lot of deal-making, of course, as always. Anyway, yeah. One belt, one road.
Well, the plan is very simple once you understand it. It's going from transportation hub to transportation hub. You could think of it as port to port.
Yeah.
Either seaport or inland port, but it's port to port. And everything that moves in a straight line along with it, and that's electricity, fiber optic cable, pipelines, rail lines, highways.
Which is really dumb when you think about it.
Because
why do... And this is the thing that really drove me nuts about the idea of the NASCO corridor. Because how does it make sense from a homeland security standpoint, from a national security standpoint, to have all your infrastructure in the center of the country together? I mean, if somebody wants to attack anything, pipelines, water, electricity, hey, they don't have to do it all over the country. It's all consolidated in one spot. All you got to do is disrupt it in one area, and you've crippled the whole country.
Right, and that's another reason why those transportation hubs are choke points.
Mm-hmm.
Because they, I mean, we couldn't possibly make it any easier for the enemy to control us.
Exactly. All right.
And the enemy turns out to be China.
Well, the enemy really is from within.
Well, that's true. That's true.
My party.
Here are some other major factors that explain why China is undertaking a project of this magnitude. The Communist Party has staked its reputation on non-stop economic growth. Since they hold all the power, the Chinese people expect them to deliver. But with its domestic megaproject boom nearing completion, China must find new buyers for all the steel, cement, and construction machinery its economy produces, or many of its factories could grind to a halt. It is decided the solution is One Belt, One Road, but lending hundreds of billions of dollars to many countries with weak credit ratings and unstable political systems is very risky, which reveals an underlying sense you get when you look closely at One Belt, One Road, China's increasing desperation. The country's national debt is already very high, but borrowing continues to accelerate at historic levels as state-owned banks loan more and more money to state-owned companies.
Does this sound familiar?
The prime example of the risks associated with the tightrope the Communist Party is trying to walk was the government's bailout issued during China's recent stock market collapse. That crisis was caused by the same sense of impatience that's driving OBOR, the party's need to feed the insatiable economic growth monster. Using its powerful propaganda machine, Beijing urged its own people to invest their savings heavily in its immature, unstable market, causing inexperienced citizens to treat investments in companies like bets at a casino, creating a huge bubble that, naturally, burst. The government then suspended trading for a while and pumped billions into the system to avoid a total collapse. So really, when you step back, the core motivation for One Belt, One Road boils down to the Communist Party's need to buy itself more time in order to come up with its next scheme to prop up the economy. Because when it inevitably slows down, which it's already starting to do, the party's promise to deliver a fantastic economic dream world will have been proven false for everyone in China but the elites.
Okay, I want to jump in here for just a second. We're over halfway done with this clip, but you can sit there and cheer this. Because you can say on one hand, hey, it's great that China is in trouble because they're going down, just like the collapse of the Soviet Union. Isn't it great that they're going down? The problem is, when they go down, they take everyone else down with them because the scumbag traders in our government have allowed them everything to be integrated and intertangled to the point where our economy is dependent upon what they do now.
Mm-hmm. Well, you remember that speech that we talked about it, or mentioned it briefly, Gorbachev's New World Order speech.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about the international division of labor. Well, I think China's role in the international division of labor was to be the builder, the manufacturer, the, you know, anything that requires manual labor, because they have so much of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's how you get the cheapest labor costs in the world, is by having China do it. The problem with all of this globalist thinking is that, and that guy demonstrated it. He's thinking in terms of quarterly results.
Yes.
And China is looking at the long, in the long term, which is not very far away, by the way. It won't make any difference at all if how much money China has spent on this, because we are talking about control of the global economy.
Yes.
If you control the global economy, who cares, you know, how much money you've spent on it? You're not going to collapse. The idea that these international banks control things just, you know, by the balance sheet, that only works if everybody is playing the same game.
Yeah.
And, you know, the gentleman's game of the con. But China is not playing that game.
No. No, they're playing their own game. They're, mm-hmm. And this illustrates a perfect point that I think we've made in the past. If you're dumb enough to give it away, they're smart enough to take what you're willing to give away. These
yes,
people.
That's perfect. That's exactly right, Darren.
They're not stupid. They're not stupid. And I don't think our so-called leaders are either. Unfortunately, our leaders are corrupt. And this is the difficulty that we have here. It's corruption that we're fighting. And I'm hard-pressed to see any remedy.
The silver lining is that many of the ventures China has undertaken will pay long-term dividends, like building up its high-tech manufacturing center, with the anticipation that when OBOR's transportation networks are complete, it will be ready to use them to deliver higher-cost goods, like iPhones, drones, and green energy technologies to the rest of the world. The other major motivating factor here is the unmistakable opportunity to gain even power status with the United States in Asia. The election of Donald Trump, and then his decision to walk away from the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal that would have hurt China, are massive geopolitical mistakes.
Okay, now, I want to jump in here. I said it was getting political in certain points. That is something I completely disagree with. It depends upon how you look at it. If you want to compete with China, then maybe it makes sense to, you know, at any cost, then it might make sense to be a member of the TPP. The problem here, of course, is who is it going to hurt and who is it going to benefit? We're talking about benefiting big business at the expense of the average everyday American. And so, no, I don't agree that it was a geopolitical mistake.
If it would have hurt China, China wouldn't sign it. China does not do stupid things.
Well, China wasn't a party to the TPP, not yet, but they did say that later on they might join, which the whole idea of the TPP, and we're talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which Trump pulled us out of, supposedly, although I think there's other things in the works that are in the works to replace it.
They'll just give it a new name.
Well,
that's
already
what they
have.
Do every time.
They already have. There's already a trade agreement, and the name of it escapes me at the moment, but I could pull it up and will when the time comes, because we do need to talk about this later on in some future broadcast. But they're already working on its replacement, as far as I can tell.
Right.
I mean,
well,
many of the same countries are participating.
Because what they're doing is building the infrastructure for a world governing system. It's not about trade. It's not, you know, everybody needs to get that out of their heads, that it's about trade and economic benefits for people. It's not. Never has been.
Yeah, exactly.
Completely
unforced. We just
didn't
know it, you know. Now we do.
Yeah. Well, now we know the con in place.
Completely unforced errors that China intends to take full advantage of. When it first announced the OBOR back in 2013, Barack Obama had just begun his second term, and the U.S. pivot to Asia was in full force. With rivals like Japan, South Korea, and Vietnam challenging China's efforts to control maritime trade routes, it was clear China was being hemmed in on its eastern flank. Despite the election of Trump, this is still true. So by instead turning to the vast landmass to the west for new opportunities, China minimizes its reliance on maritime trade routes that could be cut off in the event of a destabilizing military conflict. At the end of the day, China is all about that business. It doesn't matter if you're a democracy, a dictatorship, or a failed state. China wants to work with you.
Yeah, and they will. But yeah. See, here's the thing about it. They're making progress on every front. And while we're hearing in the Western media all about all this collusion going on, the big, massive 600-ton elephant in the room, which is Communist China, never gets talked about. In the meantime, we have North Korea continuing to test its missile program. Now they're saying, last week they were saying, now after he tested a new missile, that he can reach anywhere in the world with his intercontinental ballistic missiles. So the South China Morning Post, which is a state-run news, propaganda, I'll call it a propaganda outfit, but it says China wins its war against South Korea's U.S. THAAD missile shield without firing a shot. Now, listen to this. They say a detente between China and South Korea may be good news for the Korean economy and a necessary step towards resolving the North Korea issue. See, here's the thing. Seoul signs up to military constraints in return for Beijing lifting economic sanctions. See, that's the key right there. Setting a worrying precedent for China's regional rivals. They say when South Korean President Moon Jae-in and Chinese President Xi Jinping agreed on November 11th to normalize exchanges, unquote, quote unquote, they ended a conflict that began more than a year ago with Seoul and Washington's decision to deploy an anti-ballistic missile system in South Korea. Beijing, which claims the system's radar can be used by the United States to spy on China, retaliated against the deployment of the Terminal High Altitude Defense, or THAAD, system with unofficial sanctions against the South. Seoul has now agreed to accept military constraints in return for lifting of those sanctions, creating a worrying precedent for Beijing's rivals in the region. The military constraints are known as the Three No's, meaning Seoul agrees that there will be no further anti-ballistic missile systems in Korea, no joining of a region-wide U.S. missile defense system, and no military alliance involving Korea, the U.S., and Japan. This is an enormous sacrifice, but for reasons both economic and political, Moon had few other options. Economically, after being suffocated for 16 months, and again, you're reading this from China's mouthpiece, so just bear that in mind when I'm reading this, but I think it's important information. Economically, after being suffocated for 16 months by China's doghouse diplomacy, many South Korean businesses were left gasping for air. Hyundai's sales in China dropped 64% in the second quarter of 2017 from a year before. Lotte's supermarket sales in China fell 95% over the same period, and Chinese tour groups to South Korea were banned outright, which alone led to an estimated revenue loss of $15.6 billion this year, according to Hyundai Research Institute. Anyway, the article goes on from there. I'm not going to read the whole thing. The point is that for economic reasons now, South Korea has agreed to not allow any kind of military opposition to North Korea because China's worried, purportedly, that such an operation could be used against them. So this is a bad deal. Now, I'm not a big fan. I mean, I don't have a whole lot of confidence in the THAAD missile defense system anyway, or any missile defense system that we employ, because we covered on this show in previous broadcasts how even their own officials on a news show, we played audio from the guy. He says it's a 60% effectiveness rate shooting these things down. So, and he was bragging. He thought that was good. That was great. 60%. We can get 60% of them. after billions being spent to develop these things.
Yeah.
So this is not good, is the bottom line. Hey, we got a call on the line.
Okay, go ahead.
Were you going to say something before that we?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think the United States strategy of creation of the illusion and talking about ideas has come back to bite us.
Yeah.
China's living in the land of the real, and we're living in a virtual reality.
La la land.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately. All right, Montana. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, Darren.
Yes.
Vicky.
Mm-hmm.
This is Ron in Montana.
Okay. How you doing?
I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller.
Okay.
But I've been watching all of this stuff going on for so many years, and I'm just sick to death. The treason that is going on in Washington, D.C. I recently heard an interview with Judge Napolitano, and the question was, if a person sees somebody committing a crime and does nothing, is he equally guilty? And the judge says, no, only in cases of treason. And in my estimation, everybody in government has committed treason.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, I would go along with that, too.
Well, I think it's time we did something. We've got to, you know, civil disobedience. We've got to do something. If we don't get something started, it'll be too late, and we're going to lose it all.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I don't know any other way. All I can say is that people had better not give up their firearms, because when these characters start invading our country, well, they already have, but I mean, when the mask comes off, and they start revealing themselves for who they really are, I mean, the takeover of every level of government, we're going to need some way of defending ourselves. And that sounds pretty dark, and I understand that, but all I can say is that this is a very dangerous time that we're living. Hey, hang on, I'll hold you over. Stay with us. I got to take the top of the hour break. We'll be back.
The crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
From just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5, this is the third and final hour of Govern America. It continues to be the 2nd of December, 2017, as we get right back into the show here, talking about the THAAD missile system, the treachery from within the U.S. government, and the infiltration of the communist Chinese, as everybody is alerted about the collusion with the Russians, which, as far as I can tell, doesn't really exist, although, frankly, it does exist when you're talking about the people pointing the finger at everybody else. Anyway, we have Ron in Montana on the line right now. And you're welcome to call in as well, 844-646-8376, toll-free 844-6-GOVERN. That's 844-646-8376. The THAAD missile system, it's interesting, as I see from Russia today, Trump asks for another $4 billion to detect, defeat, and defend against North Korea. So more money for the U.S. military industrial complex, and what are we going to do? What's going to happen? What's going to be the solution when we can't even use South Korea as a launching point, and our missile defense system has a 60% effective rate at defending against anything?
I don't know why it would be 60%. I mean, they've been working on the trajectory of rockets and missiles and everything since the 1940s.
Yeah.
Is when they started using computers. As a matter of fact, that was one of the first uses of computers, was for the military to be able to calculate the trajectory of rockets.
And the point here is, of course, it only takes one nuclear-armed missile, listeners, to wreak devastation on the target. You know, it only takes one. If they fire off multiple ones, and I'm not trying to fear-monger here, I'm just facing the reality. This is the situation that your leaders in Washington, D.C. have set you up for. Anyway, Ron, yeah. I think I had to cut you off going into that last break. Did you want to pick it up with your thoughts?
Well, I'm a Korean veteran, Darren.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been around for a long time, and I was listening to Michael Rivero yesterday, and a lot of his callers were talking about revolution, and that's not a good thing.
No,
I don't. Somebody starts a revolution, they're going to declare martial law, and it's over with. But I think with civil disobedience, we can bring the government down.
Well, I don't know that I want to bring the government down. I mean, the problem is that the difficulty here, as wicked and horrible as the government is, the void that will exist if you bring the government down, quote-unquote, first of all, they have continuity of government plans in place. There's a shadow government waiting in the wings to take over, so there's really no way to bring the government down, per se. I understand the spirit of those that say that, but the difficulty here is that I think when you do that, you open up a can of worms that you'll wish you'd never opened. It's a Pandora's box that, and believe me, as I look at the Trump administration being who he is, I could completely see him accelerating the police state to the max to put down any rebellion. And that is the one area in the Constitution that does give them the ability. I mean, they have to provide for the calling forth of the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. That's constitutional. So that's a danger that we need to avoid. Go ahead, I'm sorry. Are you there?
We have a shadow government right now.
Agreed.
And so I just think, yeah, I don't know.
You would be bringing down the domestic government, but the international governing system, NATO, the UN, the other countries, they would move in a heartbeat to fill the void.
The void. It's the void that nature abhors a vacuum, and certainly political offices really, I mean, the vacuum that's there will be filled rapidly, and I got a feeling we won't like the replacement.
Well, and who would we be fighting? Well, we'd be fighting those people, the Antifa, you know, the communists in Berkeley. That's the kind of people we would be fighting.
We would be fighting each other, but we'd also be fighting potentially a foreign power. UN, you know, it's like that Henry Kissinger quote. Today, UN troops would... Americans would be outraged if UN troops entered Los Angeles to restore order. Tomorrow, they will be grateful. That's what he, was quoted as saying.
I remember him saying that.
At a Bilderberg conference. So we have to be smart as we possibly can. And I don't like the system. I'm not an advocate of the system. And this is a complicated thing about this whole thing, because I completely get where you're coming from.
Yeah, me too. But we are walking a tightrope.
Exactly.
Now,
any other thoughts there, Ron?
Well, I suppose we... Okey-doke. Well, thanks for taking my call, Darren.
Hey, thanks, Ron. Appreciate it. Hope you'll call back. Hopefully we didn't discourage him too much. I know, folks, these are complicated issues.
It's very complicated, and sometimes what you think is the solution is just, you know, jumping from the frying pan into the fire.
Yeah, but I completely understand people that you know, say, we need a revolution, we need a revolution. The difficulty here is, yeah, you can have a revolution, but many countries have had revolutions, and they've turned communist afterward.
Right.
And so I have to question the motive of some of the people that are calling for revolution. And I know the caller wasn't calling for that. He was putting it down.
Yeah.
But I have to question some of the people that are calling for that, because you're going to get into a situation where, I mean, as bad as things are, ladies and gentlemen, it could be worse. At least we have the facade at this point in time that we have some rights. At least in order to avoid mass rebellion, in order to avoid a mass uprising, they have to pretend, and they are pretending, to do this in your interest. Now, as crazy as that seems, that is the facts. Those are the facts. The vast majority of the American people are still, and I know because I see them on Twitter, I see them on these social media sites, they're still under the illusion that the Constitution is being followed. Until you get yourself into a situation like the Hammonds or the Bundys, or you're in some kind of situation where you have your wake-up call, or you try
smart,
to run
your smart meter.
Your smart meter. Well, even that, they don't understand the real purpose of a smart meter, even as that document, which was colluding with the Russians, the State Department, and the city of San Diego, that was pretty monumental. I don't remember seeing that before. But that document indicated that the goal was reduction, was behavior control, was behavior modification. I'm not sure exactly how they put it, but that's what they said, is to force behavior modification. So a lot of people are completely ignorant about all this stuff.
Are you going to ask me why I happened to find that document?
Go ahead. Why did you happen to find that document?
There's an electric utility in northern Idaho that is being sold to a Canadian company. And a lot of people up in northern Idaho are really upset about that. And the really bad part of it is that it puts those people in regulatory limbo.
Mm.
Are they governed by because the distribution system and the transmission system are governed under different areas of law. So are they going to be governed under the transmission system, which is international, by the way, the North American Electric Reliability Corporation,
mm-hmm.
Our electric grid. Yeah, is being regulated through an international organization, but our distribution system is still being regulated under FERC and our electric, our utility commissions in our states.
That's the Federal Electric Reliability Corporation, right?
Pardon me?
Isn't that the Federal Electric Reliability Corporation?
FERC. Yeah. It's the federal electric regulatory system or energy regulatory system. I can't remember exactly what the acronym means.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, FERC is international, and FERC is national, and NERC is international.
Gotcha.
But after this Uranium One deal, okay, now I didn't even tell you the punchline yet. Some of the shareholders of Avista are Middle Eastern countries, Bahrain and Saudi Arabia.
Hmm.
And they're voting to go with Canada. So I'll have more information on that next week. A friend of mine just told me about it last night.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to have to research it more, but I think it's a very dangerous thing. And I told her, I said, what those people up there should do is get an injunction to stop the sale. Because, you know, did Cephas review that? I don't know. But
moving on, in the interest of time, we were talking about the one belt, one road initiative done by the communist Chinese. In that vein, I said that the same thing is going on in Afghanistan and Pakistan. There was a panel discussion from the Center for Strategic and International Studies this past week on the subject of the private sector development in Afghanistan. This is now we've talked about on this broadcast numerous times about how our Middle Eastern policy and really our policy, foreign policy altogether, is about business. It's about business. It's about corporations. It's about making profits. Multinationals. And they don't care how many people they have to kill to destabilize and get rid of regimes that are not on board. It doesn't matter. Human life completely doesn't matter. What matters is business. Just like Marie Harf, the former State Department spokeshole, getting up there and talking about brand America. We got a powerful brand. Oh, other countries like to cooperate with us because look at our brand. They love us. Yeah, they love you until you kill their families, destroy their infrastructure. But you see, here's the thing. When you destroy people's infrastructure, you spend a lot of money. And then you spend a lot of money building it all back. But the lives that are ruined in the meantime, you can't build those back. So how much do they really love us?
It's the transportation infrastructure. It's the electricity. It's the pipelines.
It's everything. Huh. Yeah,
that corresponds to the
One Belt, One Road. Here we are, full circle.
Everything is logical once you get on the right path.
Yeah.
You've got to be on the right path, and then you can see how everything makes sense.
So this is Gregory Hunter with the U.S. Agency for International Development, which is an arm of the State Department. He's going to tell you what we're doing in Afghanistan, but also in Pakistan.
I feel very fortunate to be returning to USAID at a time when we actually do have a strategy. Within it, then, we have a component, as I said, for Afghanistan, for Pakistan. The Afghanistan role for USAID, if you will, is to help with three things. First, to sustain the gains made in the social sector over the last 16 years, health, education, and women's empowerment. The second is to help build the bond between the government and the citizens, and that through three things: through the service delivery that I mentioned, through credible elections, and through significant...
Not credible elections. That's a laugh, ladies and gentlemen.
Because that's the National Endowment. Everything you've named so far is the National...
National Endowment for Democracy?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
That is the cookie-cutter plan.
Yeah, and if you think that they're going to have honest elections in Afghanistan, when we can't even have an honest election in the United States... Oh, you know, maybe the Russians will hack their election too, huh?
And through significantly reduced corruption.
Yeah.
The third of three is private sector-led economic development, focused on market centers and, importantly but not exclusively, on exports.
Market centers, Vicky, market centers.
And exports.
Doesn't that sound like hubs?
Oh, it absolutely is. And the what he said about education and healthcare, that's the technology, you know, going to the universities and to the hospitals. That also becomes the technology for the ports, that is the control technology. That's how you control.
Mm-hmm.
Is through the technology. And Lockheed was one of the companies that developed it. Lockheed and Booz Allen Hamilton. So
he goes on to talk about Pakistan in relation to Afghanistan and some of the things that they're trying to do to overcome tribalism so that they can create a stable environment for business.
Now, in Pakistan, where we've been engaged for a long time, so the first one is to help Pakistan merge Fatah with Khyber Pakhtunkhwa, or to mainstream the federally administered tribal area Fatah in any way they feel appropriate with the adjacent province of Khyber Pakhtunkhwa. And in doing that, to help make that area a place where the people who have lived there all along can live a normal life. And to help there were 1.6 million people displaced by conflict into the rest of Pakistan. About 85 to 90% of them have returned. So to make it possible for them to reintegrate. So that's the first piece. The second piece is to help communities in Pakistan, particularly the areas vulnerable to extremism, to gain resilience against that. And the third is helping Pakistan attract private investment to create jobs, particularly for the younger people, because of the very large youth bulge that Pakistan has.
Now, get ready to really pay attention here, because what he's saying here is going to be pretty monumental.
In Pakistan and Afghanistan, and also in the broader context, as I'll mention in a minute, to make the relationship with India as constructive as possible. Within that, one of the things that Afghanistan has done over the last year is to create an air corridor between Kabul, Kandahar, and India, and Delhi. This has been a real support to businesses, private Afghan businesses that are exporting the processed product of the countryside. The things for which Afghanistan is well known, particularly in markets in the region. So the fruit, fresh and dry, nuts, carpets, marble, onyx, gemstones, cashmere wool, those kinds of things. And so this air corridor has been quite successful, and now is, I understand from my last trip to Kabul, they're contemplating extending that to the UAE, Kazakhstan, some other Central Asian countries, and perhaps Turkey. As that happens, and as we collaborated, Hisham, with our business colleagues in Egypt and other places, the processing or the ability to invest in plant and equipment to process the product of the countryside depends importantly on, one, a policy, regulatory, and administrative environment that's conducive to that, and no one knows it better than the business people themselves. Second, security, electricity, easy, clear access to land, and a transparent relationship between the business and the government, so they can pay their taxes, get their permits, and do all the things that they need to do that kind of business. We think that that is a real opportunity for Afghanistan, and so we're going to be doing everything we can to support it, and would like to see 5, 7, 10 years hence what one can see if one drives from Cairo to Alexandria, drip irrigation all the way, producing high-value crops for the local and export markets.
Okay, so what do you think so far? Vicky, I'll tell you what. Go ahead and give your opinion about, you know, talk to the listeners, can you, for just a moment while I got somebody pounding on the window here.
Okay. Yeah, well, what I heard with that is, you know, dropping a New York City business model into basically what is a tribal area. Those people really are not ready, and most of the world, most of the undeveloped world is not really ready for the kind of sophisticated business model that we have here in the United States and Europe and everywhere else. And that's why the wars that we've had to fight over in Afghanistan and over in Africa and all around the world is that they are trying to force society to live through 150 years of development in just a few years.
Okay, Vicky, I got to interrupt you. I got a family emergency right now, so I'm going to have to end the show right now. My daughter was on the ice. a moment ago, and apparently fell and hit her head.
Oh, God.
So I got to go, folks. The stations that are carrying us, stay tuned, and we'll have something here on the stream. It'll be last week's show, but I've got to go.
Okay. I hope she's okay, Darren. Bye.
Thanks.